September 6th, 1970.
Yeah, a mow of hay, or a bay of hay. It's all the same. Means the same.
Was that supposed to contain any fixed amount of hay, or just as big as the bay happened to be?
It was a big, high barn, and the bay run to the roof. Mm-hmm. But when you got up high enough, you'd have to, in the bay, up high enough for the hay, you have to pitch it over the beam. Mm-hmm. Off the load, over the beam. Yeah.
There was also a front window up above the main doors of the barn where you brought hay in.
Double doors, they use a hay for it. Double doors.
Those are high up, like we have in our little garage then.
Yeah.
Only much, much bigger.
Oh, they were wide doors that opened up on hinges. Mm-hmm. And of course, then you got on hay and you closed them. Or else you leave them open for air so the hay wouldn't heat until it got too cold for the cattle. too cold. Have to shut them doors up above there.
Remember any fires that were caused by too much wet hay being stored in a...
Oh, there's been lots of fires around the country, combustion. Put wet hay in the barn, they put it in too wet, and it heats.
How about in your neighborhood? Whose barn was burned that way?
Not out there, not, you mean out in Bangor?
No, well, either,
no, not up here
either on the Foot Road area or the Bangor area.
No, it's been lately.
Were many farms burned by lightning?
Well, that was a terrible storm the night that Lyman Foote's barns burned. He had five or six old-fashioned great big barns full of hay. And say, talk about storming and the wind blowing. Grandma Nancy wasn't nervous, but she was scared to death. My mother was awful afraid. The whole sky was lit up with lightning and that and big barns. Up on the hill here where I went to school.
Right next to Ike Foote's?
Yeah. I could take you up there. Now they've got a brand new hip roof barn, a red one. I don't know who owns the farm now. George Gates owned it, Lyman Foote owned it, or Lyman Foote owned it first. His wife's name was Bid. She was a Bid Daly before she married Lyman Foote. They had two sons, Robert and Lewis. I think one of them is a doctor somewhere in New York, and I think, I'm not sure about the other one. And they had an orphan boy there by the name of Jimmy Crowley. And he came to school right there in that white schoolhouse where I went. James Crowley. I don't know where he went to. William Foote in Whippleville was Lyman's father. Old Bill Foote was the father of Clay Westcott's wife, Nellie. Nellie Foote married Clay Westcott. And Nellie Foote and Lyman Foote were brother and sister. I'm coming along there now. Well, I don't remember who built the new barns, but I do know that it was an awful looking place, and the ditches and the roads was all washed out. Down back of the barns there was ditches a foot deep where that's, it must have been half snow, hail, and storm and rain. Struck them good old barns. Or Ed Rex's barn burned a long time after. I was the first one seeing it. I came out of the schoolhouse at 4 o'clock and I had my coat on my arm, my dinner pail, and it had been quite a little storm before she let school out. But we did have an awful crack of lightning and thunder together. So, I stepped to the entry door as I was getting ready to go home across the fields. I see smoke coming out of the gable end of the barn, way up high where the hay fork track was. I went back in and I said to the teacher, "I think Mr. Rex's barn is on fire, or will be." She said, "Harold, run down to Foots and break the news. I think there's a lot of cattle in there." Well, it was pouring rain, so I went right down to Ike Foots, just not too far, where Hollis was born and brought up. I guess that's where he was born. Ralph Foote was in there and his father, and they were relaxed and had their bedroom slippers on. And by that time, that barn was sure going. And you ought to hear them cattle and horses in there moaning and bellowing and suffering. There was about 100, over 100 tons of hay upstairs that came down on them. Of course, they smothered. But they suffered awful before they did smother. He had 3 colts in there, 4 or 5 calves, and about 40 cows, all last year cows. But after I told the Foots, I went across, just across the road to Rex's. I said to Mrs. Rex, she was ironing. I said, "The barn is on fire," and she fell right back over backwards, fainted dead away. She had a daughter that lived with her by the name of Katie Childs. Katie Childs was the daughter from her first husband. She must have married a child and probably died. Then she married Ed Rex. Well, by that time, the horses and buggies was coming from every direction. They were tying them over to Foots, around to the fence posts and places, and then they were moving the furniture out of the Rex's house. They broke more and they moved. Took it down near the trees. I looked up down by Charlie Marx's. And I see this tall man coming with, he always had a good looking team, with chestnut horses. He'd been down to Malone and sold somebody a load of hay. He was standing up, letting the team was walking along slow. As you come up the hill, you know where, as you come up the hill, Ike Foote, and I think 'twas Ralph down here, met him. Boy, he fell right into a heap, and they took the horses across the road, put them in their barn, and they put him to bed. He could see everything. Standing up on the hay rack. Tall man he was. He went right into a heap right there on that rack, or I guess he was off on the ground. They took care of him anyway. I don't know if they had the doctor. I don't know if they did. I wouldn't know. I was only a kid going to school.
What caused you to leave Russ's?
Oh, I guess he sold out to Alders and Tarbell. Alex Champagne that just died, he got through too. I think that must have been the reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of an operation was Aldridge and Tarbell?
Well, just like Russie's. Well, they drawed their milk from that big Tarbell on the Bangor Road, had all them couple of hundred Jersey cows out there. And Aldridge. They got milk from Aldridge. Their place of business where they sold milk was But up here at Crift's, Aldis and Tarbell had their office there and their milk business where they pasteurized it and pasteurized it. I don't think they ever homogenized it, whatever you call it. And that Cashin girl, what's her name? That Cashin girl? She kept books in there for Aldis and Tarbell.
Cashman.
And she kept books when they moved out on the Bangor Road when they built that big establishment that's there now. Then Criff, he took over, I think. He's there anyway.
So what did you do after you left Russi's? Which was probably in the middle or late 20s. So how many years did you work there?
A couple, I guess. Maybe more.
So it was probably in the late 20s. Where was your mother living when you left there?
T-22 East Main.
Still living there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you do after you left here?
I fooled around. I just can't remember.
That's when you worked for Drury.
I think so. Worked for Drury, I guess.
When did you have your taxi business?
That only lasted a week.
Oh, did you have it when?
I think between the time when I got through with the railroad shop and before I went to Russell's.
Mm-hmm.
Just 1 week that lasted.
Mm-hmm. Tell about that.
I took Harry Boyce and Charlie Connors to Montreal. They hired me.
What did you call your taxi service?
Didn't have any name. We didn't have no. I didn't carry anybody else, only Charlie Connors and Floyd Lewis and his son. Four of them. I made two trips and that was all I wanted.
Well, how did you set yourself up to be known as a taxi driver?
Well, I just had to go up and get an omnibus license.
Uh-huh.
Put a little sign in the car or taxi. Mm-hmm. But I didn't stay on Main Street or anywhere else. I wouldn't. I wouldn't stand that stuff.
So you stayed at 322 East Main?
Yeah. Omnibus license is when you can charge, you know. That's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Harry Boyce and Charlie Connors always lived in Belmont Center. Charlie Connors was Bernie Kaufman's wife's father. He was a stout, red-faced man. Good-looking man. But don't meddle with him unless you want to get hurt. With a heavy voice he had. Big, heavy hands and heavy legs under him. Well, of course, Charlie Connors and Harry Boyce was friends all their life. And Harry happened to know that I was going to drive that taxi. Harry'd been drinking in his life some back when he was younger. He was kind of rough. He said, "When did Charge take Charlie and I to Montreal?" Well, I said, "I don't really know. We'll fix it up some way." Well, I got them into Montreal. The first thing they done is get just about half cockeyed, the both of them. Kept me waiting out front there somewhere. And then they come out locked arms. Got themselves into the car. It was a Ford sedan. Model T, I guess. It was a Ford sedan, anyway. So I turned around right there and I said to him, "We got to get back to the ferry if you want to go to Malone." And I kept right on driving. It's only two blocks to take the ferry over to Caughnawaga, and wasn't it a bridge? There was a bridge, you have to go way around. Bridge is there yet? A brand new bridge. Well, they got kind of mean. They said, "What do you suppose we care if we don't go home?" I didn't make them any answer, but I got to the ferry. They had fool with me. I got to the ferry, and it was just a going over across the water. We were late. "Well," I said, "what are you fellows going to do now?" Fooled around, we missed the ferry. Harry and Charlie Connors. Belmont Centerites. Well, they both got out and they went down street somewhere where they came out of, and I stayed in the car all night. Long daylight in the morning, or long before daylight, somebody shaking the car, it was them two pops. I slept in the car all night. Nothing over me. I got them home. I said to my mother, "That's all that I'm going to do. I've had an awful time."
Was the Raymond business before then?
Before then.
Yeah, what happened with the Raymond?
Floyd Lewis was a candy maker, a taffy maker.
Mm-hmm.
And Raymond, he was a...
Oh, Raymond Lewis.
Raymond Lewis was Floyd's son.
Uh-huh.
And the mother of Raymond that Floyd Lewis married, that's why Raymond had... His name was Raymond, because Floyd Lewis married Delia Raymond. And she was Delia Lewis. And they had a store like Millette's, and that's where he made his candy.
Where was it located?
Right where Millette's is.
The new Millette's?
Yeah, but there was another building, smaller. That tore that down, built another one, somebody. That Floyd Lewis owned the house in back. Floyd Lewis, a piano player, too, a taffy maker, and a candy maker. Slim man, nice looking man, wore glasses. Raymond wore glasses too. And Raymond was a mean pop. I guess he went to Canada. He can't get back in the States, I heard that. I haven't seen him in years. I don't know who he married, somebody down there, I guess.
Well, proceed.
So, Floyd said, "Will you take Raymond and I to Saturday Night Lake?" And I said, "Sure. Get in." Boys, when I was up in Saturday Night Lake, it sure did start to snow. That wet, heavy snow. They wanted to collect some insurance. They had insurance business too, both of them. Well, they went into one of them hotels. Raymond says, "Here's one of our customers in here." Yeah, I said, "I guess so." We got there a little after noon, and I couldn't get them started till after dark. They didn't collect any insurance. They both got cockeyed. Then they got fighting. Broke Raymond's glasses. I got peeved. They said, "Take us to Moari, God damn you." That's the way they talked to me. I said, "No, I'm taking you home. Did you, you fellas have been up here all day. I had nothing to eat." "Now sit quiet." I said, "Floyd, sit in front and leave him alone. If you can get in here." He said, "Take us to Moari anyway. Well, go up there and see a fella." I said, "No, you've seen all the fellas you're going to see if you ride with me." I was getting peeved. A lot heavier than I am now, quite a bit. Old Floyd says, Raymond says, "Shut up." Oh, shut your own mouth. Of course, Raymond, he leaned ahead to talk to his father, and he bumped his nose on the back of the seat and broke his glasses. Some way.
They didn't come to blows, did they?
Pretty near it. I don't know, they come to pushing. I kept right on driving. It was getting slippery, you know, coming down through the woods. It wasn't any Route 30, it was all that crooked roads. Boy, was I glad when I got that pair home. I had to help Floyd into his old house.
Were they dressed in business suits for this errand?
Yeah, white collars and good-looking suits and spats on, pencils behind their ears. Yeah, they were a nice-looking pair when they got back. Looked as if they'd been dragged behind the truck. Of course, Dilly, she got mad.
What'd she say?
Well, she said, McGowan, where you been with them two? Well, I said I couldn't get them home, but you're lucky that I did get them home, or something like that. And I went out. Boys, it was a red-hot fight over there after I went away, right across the road. So, Raymond was swearing, and Floyd was hollering, shut up. Dilly got to throwing things, and I was on the porch listening. I said to my mother, come on out and take a listen to this performance. She said, did you have that to contend with? I said, yeah, but only worse. Well, just a little while, I shouldn't have done it. Raymond, he kind of sobered up.
That's the son.
Yeah. And he come over across the road and he said, Harold, will you come over? And my mother's fainted away on the floor. Well, I said, what do you want me to do about it? Well, he said, Floyd won't help me and I can't get her up. Well, I said, Raymond, I don't want to interfere with your business. Well, he said, can't you come over and help me? So, my mother says, why, yes, why don't you go along, Harold? You've been with them all day. Well, I said, I don't want to interfere with that woman laying on the floor there. None of my affairs. I always kind of liked Delia Lewis. She wasn't very big, heavy. Well, they'd been throwing books in there and having quite a time. There was an empty pail sitting there on a chair or on the floor somewhere, and I went and filled it half full of cold water. And I threw it in Dilly's face. Oh, Christ, Raymond said, what'd you do that for? I said, you want me to, you got me over here to help you. Boy, did she get up off the floor quick. She was hysterical.
Yeah.
The cold water fixed her. Threw a half a pail, a 10-quart pail, half full of water right in that woman's face. Well, I didn't drown her. She wasn't to blame for the thing.
What'd she do there?
Well, I went out and went across the road, and of course I strung, all unstrung, and I couldn't sleep. Nano got some coffee for me again. And I said, you know what I done? I went and sold water in Delia's face over there, pretty near a pailful. So what you trying to do, kill her? Well, I said, I don't know if she's living or not, but she got up.
Yeah.
Like a drowned rat. So the next day, next morning she come over all cleaned up, Raymond with her. I expected her to have me arrested or something. But they come in and Nana was nice, and so was I. I guess I'd been sleeping quite a bit. Mrs. Lewis said, "Harold, where did, on earth did these two apes go yesterday?" I said, "You want me to tell tales out of school? I'll tell you." I said, "I really had an awful day, and I beg your pardon if I threw water in your face. No wonder you fell down." "Well," she said, "I guess it didn't hurt me any. I seemed to get right up, but it was pretty chilly." So, well, I said, what they were supposed to be doing is collecting insurance up there in Serenite Lake. But they said that there was a man in that hotel they wanted to see. But I said, I figured from the way things, way it happened, that they wanted to see the bartender. And that's where we stayed. I sat out front till I got cold and waiting, never come out. I guess I went in 3-4 times. Yep. Well, the bartender says, "Why don't you go with the boy or man?" Yeah, I said, "I want to go home. It's getting dark and snowing." Well, they come along after a while. But she said, "Now, what was the deal that you and Floyd and Raymond made?" Well, I said, "I forgot what I charged them. I was gone 7 or 8 hours. I can't remember what they paid me, but they paid a day or two." And I said to my mother, "The car's in the garage, and what do you say if we leave it there?"
You had another commotion with one of the Lewises at one time, didn't you? While you were living at 322 East May?
That's the one.
No, you had another fight with somebody across the road.
Oh, Jim Doherty.
Now, where did he live?
Well, he worked for my father 7 years.
Oh, yes, he was the hired man.
Yeah.
And he did not live across the road at that time you had the fight.
No, he come downtown. He lived up to old Pat Doherty's after he got through working for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And proceeded to get cockeyed. He was an awful good man to work with horses and cattle. But she sold the farm to Henry Coughlin, and Henry Coughlin didn't hire him. That's when we lived in Malone before she bought the Bangor place. Well, it's kind of disgraceful. I was lugging wet wash. That's when I was working on the wet wash, when he come and tried to grab me.
That was before you worked for the railroad, or?
I guess it must have been.
So describe what happened before you worked for the railroad or for us.
Well, I was quite heavy then, and I was pretty stout, lifting all them washings and lugging coal for a McLean and changing tires and things. Well, anyway, we were just getting ready to sit down and eat supper out in the kitchen in that 322 East Main of that gray house. It was cream color then, and Emerson Rand and Doris Hathaway married Emerson Rand, and they came from Serenite Lake or Lake Placid. He was a golf instructor, a short red-faced fellow with a smile on his face all the time. I always liked him, Emerson Rand, and they had a little child. They lived upstairs. Well, her and Ralph and Emerson sitting on the front porch. Ma and I was going to eat supper.
This was your brother?
Ralph.
Yeah.
They used to come down often when Nana was there. Poor.
So, Aunt Annabelle must have been inside the house somewhere.
She probably was there somewhere. She might have been on the porch too. Well, I didn't know anything about Doherty. He came in the driveway. He must have spoke to them. He He came to the back door where we were eating supper. And the door was open. I suppose a screen door, huh? Well, he said to me, "You son of a bitch, you said you always said you could throw me." Well, I said, "What's the matter with you, Jim? Bygones is bygone." Well, he come up the steps and the coffee pot was on the stove. And he grabbed it and he threw it at me and I ducked it and he put a dent in the wall about that deep. If it hit me, it'd kill me, I guess. Well, she yelled. Well, I hit him between the eyes and I knocked him clear out behind that Ford car right there in that driveway. My mother says, but he got up and he tore my white shirt all pieces. And I hit him again and I knocked him down behind the car, down between the wall and the... I didn't suppose I'd hit anybody, I don't like it. But I hit him and I knew him like a brother. He laid there a few minutes. And of course, I was getting madder and madder, I suppose. I didn't have any shirt on. He ripped it with his fingernail right off.